good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Soundbites for this Saturday, August 12th, 1995. I'm Bob Smith, along with, around the table, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, the returning Steve Ray, and Eric Cohen, all of whom together will give you all the expert advice that you need on your Mac or PC-compatible machine. Of course, all you have to do to join in on your users group of the air is dial us up at 716-263-WXXI. That's 716-263-9994. Or join us right on the Internet directly, where our address is talk1370@vivanet.com. Either way, we're looking forward to hearing from you, answering your questions, and bringing you up to date on all the latest computing news on this edition of Soundbites. The U.S. Justice Department has decided not to take antitrust action against Microsoft to force unbundling of the Microsoft Network software from the Windows 95 operating system that will be distributed starting the 24th. The bundling has caused critics to charge that Microsoft's taking unfair advantage of its dominance in the PC operating system market to achieve dominance in the online computer business as well. Microsoft has announced Microsoft Network's aggressive pricing plan, with charges running about 12% less than America Online. The standard monthly plan, which includes 3 hours of online time, will be $4.95, with each additional hour $2.50. An annual plan costing $49.95 a year pays for 3 hours a month, with $2.50 for each additional hour. Frequent users can pay $19.95 a month for 20 hours and $2 for each additional hour. Enrollment will be limited the first year to 500,000 subscribers. Microsoft says that's to ensure customer satisfaction. The initial public offering of Netscape Communications, a California startup company that markets one of the most popular worldwide web browsers, doubled its initial offering price in a single day this week. However, on the heels of Netscape's success on Wall Street, industry analysts are still warning Microsoft's plans for its own proprietary web browser and content may possibly eventually weaken Netscape's appeal. The EDS, Information and Management Service Unit of General Motors Corporation, a company originally founded and run by H. Ross Perot, is spinning off to become a standalone company once again. That's so that EDS can, quote, move into new markets, forge new alliances, and offer a widening array of capabilities. Few management changes at EDS are expected. Apple Computer's cutting prices on its Power Mac, bringing it more in line with rival IBM compatibles of similar power. While the high-end machine prices were trimmed about 25%, lower-end computers in the Power Mac line are now 35 to 40% cheaper. A 7200 multimedia model equipped with a 75 MHz PowerPC chip runs only about $1,700. However, some analysts are calling the cuts too little, too late. DataQuest predicting Apple's market share may drop to 5% of the overall market over the next 5 years. CompuServe says it will unbundle its network software with Packard Bell's Navigator interface. This in a move to combat the ubiquity of Microsoft network access following the release of Windows 95. New report by the American Association of State Colleges and Universities reveals more than two-thirds of the 230 institutions surveyed either have or are considering computer competency requirements for students to graduate, but only a fifth have similar standards for professors. The report also notes computer access for the ever-growing number of part-time professors is a problem, with issues of technology integration, faculty development, and campus-wide communication coming to the fore. And nearly half of the institutions say they plan to charge for Internet access within the next 3 years, and two-thirds plan to levy fees for computer use on campus. Virtually all of them now provide such access for free. By a substantial 3-to-1 majority, the U.S. House of Representatives plan to levy fees for computer use on campus. Virtually all of them now provide such access for free. By a substantial 3-to-1 majority, the U.S. markets to competition. Long-distance and cable companies will be allowed to enter the business of providing local telephone service, with all of them able to compete in the online realms. The House bill urges online service providers like America Online, CompuServe, Prodigy, and Microsoft Network to monitor subscriber transmissions for pornography, but it will leave policing up to the providers themselves, whereas the Senate telecommunications bill will make it a crime to transmit pornographic material over the net. The House bill will also include a Democratic-sponsored amendment that would require TV networks code programs to indicate violent or sexual content and force makers of television sets to install a computer chip to allow parents to block those programs from their children's access. Challenging a recent New York Times article indicating a 50.3% employment gap for computer science PhDs, the Computing Research Association has determined the report on which the article was based included a critical incorrect number, and that computer science remains one of the best of all fields in which to obtain an advanced degree. The Red Beret Guardian Angels, a volunteer group formed in 1979 to patrol the streets and subways of the Bronx, have created cyber angels to patrol the Internet. They say there's as much need for that as there is in New York City streets. That's this week's Computer News. You're listening to Sound Bites. Hey, we are back, and it is Sound Bites coming your way for this August 12th, 1995. I'm Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, the returning Steve Ray, and Eric Cohen, all sitting around here awaiting your questions right around the table, and they're ready to answer them with expert advice if you choose to join us. And the way to join us is 716-263-WXXI, that's 263-9994, or if you happen to be wired into the Internet directly, well, zip us a message and we'll see it right away. If you send it to us at this address, talk1370@vivanet.com. We're looking forward to hearing from you either way. Gentlemen, just before we get started, Windows 95 and Golden Code, any feedback from the field yet on the final product as we know it in final form?
I don't think there was much difference between the Golden and what we were seeing in the June. The final June. The June was just the capper, and then they finally said, okay, then that's Golden. Here we go.
Right, and we may find that it's a little faster when they take out all the...
Protects
and all that stuff, but generally speaking, it's going to be what we saw in June.
Stop fixing bugs and ship the darn thing.
That's right.
Well, I've even been playing with the Windows 95 Office package, Excel, Word, and PowerPoint. And it's remarkable how fast those things pop up now with a 32-bit.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a great improvement.
Guys, do you agree with me that it's a great package if you can get it to load?
Yeah. There are a lot of machines that will not load on. The same is true of NT.
Yeah.
We just did an NT load where it got like 99% through the installation and then died. Couldn't find the CD-ROM, couldn't find the hard drive, couldn't find the darn thing. All you can do is wipe it out and go back to something else.
You know, I was talking to another friend. And we're saying how, you know, they're trying to push NT. And I tell them, well, see, Bill Gates is really setting the stage. Right now he's got it as Windows 95, and oh, by the way, you're going to need 8 mega memory.
Right.
So by next year, you know, folks are going to sit there and say, well, if I'm going to go 8, I might as well go up to 16. Well, now I've got the 16 meg, gee, I could run NT. And I think it's... down the road, another year or 2 years out, you're just going to see it fuse as one product.
Right.
There's not
going to
be
say,
NT, and there's not going to be Windows 95.
Right. The problem is Bill Gates wants everybody to go to NT, but people won't make the jump from 4 meg to 24 meg. So he's asking them to make the jump from 4 to 8, and of course, they run it on 8, they'll immediately want 12 or 16.
Yep.
And then when you're up to 16, going up to 20, 24, another 4 meg, another 8 meg, big deal. Now you could run NT. So in a few years you'll see it because NT is going to get the 95 interface.
And he's stretching it out over time and time over, you know, and money.
And when you are the richest human being on the planet, you can wait everybody else.
It's called creative marketing.
He's got it in his pocket. We got Windows 95, 96, 97, 98, 99. What do you get next? Windows, ooh, ooh.
Windows, ooh, right.
Well, we talked to a lot of memory manufacturers at Boston.
They're all waiting to raise those prices.
Yeah. Well, we're asking them why the prices haven't come down. They seem to be artificially high. And most of the companies, most of the American companies we talked to, said it's the foreign DIMM, the chip manufacturers, that are artificially making shortages so they can keep the prices high. And then once they're able to put the chips on the SIM and now DIMM cards, with the Macintosh operating system using more and more memory and immense applications coming out needing more and more memory, same thing happening on all other platforms,
yep.
and now Windows 95 wanting more and more memory, there's going to be an artificial shortage of memory to keep the prices up,
mm-hmm.
and it's horrible.
And Bill Gates, 1983, 640K is all any computer user will ever need.
Leafing through some of the old SATA Press newsletters from years ago, you know, I see these full-page ads for companies offering memory, $300 a meg.
Well, those were the good old days.
Such a deal.
Okay. 263-WXXI, area code 716, is how you get involved on Sound Bites. We'd love to hear from you and answer your questions. And let's go to Canandaigua first. And hi, you're on the air.
Morning, guys. This is Norm Litchie.
Hi, Norm.
Norm. Hey, I got a question. TDD for the deaf, you know, those deaf terminals.
Yep, yep.
Those things run on normal modem tones, and they run ASCII. Or they
No, they're completely different.
Yeah, it's a 5-bit Bodo code.
That's what I thought. The last time I played with this, it was 5-bit Bodo. Yeah. It's still that way.
We are hearing that there are new TDD terminals that also do TTY, and then can connect to any computer with a TTY terminal emulator.
Okay, but it takes a special modem.
Well, usually TDDs are their own modem.
Yeah.
And they include everything in one.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, if you were starting from scratch and we're gonna hook a computer and make a TDD site out of it, you need a modem that would have
a different special
tone, right?
Product, right? Yeah. Exactly.
Any idea where I find something like that?
If you want to check with the ABVI.
ABVI.
Yeah, the Association
of the Blind and Visually Impaired. The gentleman up there, his name is Enrique. Just ask for him, and he can help you out. Okay. I've been working with quite a bit with the folks with the ABVI.
Yeah, it sounds like a good way to make an old computer live again. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if they can't help you, call Robert Van Etten at Adaptive Living.
Where do I know that name?
On Charles Street.
You probably know that name. He's been on this program several times, very active in adapting technology for folks to make the workplace friendly for them.
Okay, and he's where now?
Adaptive Living.
Okay.
He's in the city.
On Charles Street.
Right.
In fact, Enrique and his wife run a BBS with full voice interface, and they get all their email through voice coders.
So WitsEnd BBS. Yeah. It's a great BBS, by the way. You can give them a call at 288-1474.
But like I say, he's up on all the cutting tech, you know, stuff that's coming out right now as far as equipment for the blind and visually impaired.
Yeah, okay, this is a deaf thing.
Yeah, same, you know, they still
same,
work
same
with
group, okay.
They still work with those folks.
And their BBS is a 288-1474.
Yeah,
okay.
No, wait. What'd you say?
I
said 288-1474.
BBS or a voice line at 288-1474?
That's a BBS.
That's a BBS. Okay, that's what I got written down on.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks very much.
Sure.
Hey, our pleasure. That's what we're here for, to help you. 716-263-WXXI or talk1370 at vivinet.com. Sound Bites and WXXI Rochester, WEOS-FM Geneva, with Bob Smith and Nick Francesco and Dave Enright and Steve Ray and Eric Cohen and you. And let's go to Penfield next. And hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Edie from the computer camp.
Hi.
Edie,
how are you?
Okay. I first of all want to thank you for the visit. It was wonderful. The girls really loved everything that you presented and learning, you know, a different perspective on
them. Well, it was fun.
It was our pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I have two things that I want to share with your listeners. First of all, if they want to be on the mailing list for next year's camp, they can call 377-6862, and I'll put them on the mailing list for next year. And the other thing, which is the real reason I called, was this is for teachers. And Intel is offering a package called The Journey Inside the Computer, and it includes a video and a teacher's guide and a poster and a computer chip kit for putting things together. And you can get it by contacting Intel at 800-346-3029, extension 143.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for passing that along.
Okay.
It's going to help a lot of folks.
Okay.
Hey, let's go next on the road. And hi, you're on the air on Sound Bites.
Yeah, hi. My name's Jim from Rochester.
Hey, Jim.
I'm looking for a program that can convert HPGL, the Hewlett-Packard graphics files, to something that a Mac might be able to understand and manipulate with a graphics program.
Off the top of my head, probably Graphic Converter.
Okay.
Which handles just about every format on any platform, even does Sun Raster and Amiga images.
one of the problems, I tried that already, mm-hmm. and it converts it to a TIFF file, and so I can't actually...
bitmap, yeah.
Yeah, I can't manipulate the individual vectors that are in the HPGL. Mm-hmm.
There's a commercial program called Debabilizer.
Okay.
That handles many, many graphic formats, and I don't know offhand whether they retain the vector data or not, but
okay.
it's maybe good to try calling them.
What about Hijack? If you export
yeah, if you start on the DOS side and export them through Hijack, that may work too. And
okay.
you might be able to get it into an EPS.
Yeah, Hijack will take your curve file and push it out to EPS. And
then you can bring it into Illustrator or Freehand.
Okay, great. Now, is Hijack a shareware program? Or
no, it's a commercial product.
Okay, is it bundled with PageMaker or any of these other things, or standalone?
No, standalone product. H-I-J-A-K.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Glad to help. And I tell you what, we are going to get an update on what's going on in the imaging realms. Our roving business and technology correspondent, John Larish, happens to be on the line and waiting for us and waiting for a chance to tell us what's going on right now. He's been all around the world recently. And, John, what's going on?
Well, I was supposed to be down to talk to you this morning, but we forgot it. This morning,
oh, well.
Unfortunately, Bob. But SeaGraph this year in Los Angeles was very spectacular, and that's the one I want to share with our folks here in the Rochester area. SeaGraph is the special interest group graphics of the IEEE, and this was their 22nd year, and this year it was like 35,000 people in Los Angeles, and they blew our minds looking at the graphics, particularly what's been done in the movie industry, because the movies today are very, very heavily dependent on it. I was talking to an animator from up in San Francisco, and he says, we haven't even begun to use the resolution that we can do today. So it's getting to be a very exciting field.
When we're talking about exciting field, I mean, I'm conjuring up images of the next Mickey Mouse cartoon in 3D looking like it's full motion live action. Is that what they're going to be able to do?
Some of the things that we saw at their evening show looked exactly like that. I say that some of the stuff that came out of the Sony graphic studios actually looked 3D. They were 70 millimeter, 60 frame per second projections on the Shrine Auditorium Theater screen. Well, the Shrine Auditorium is where they hold the Academy Awards
right.
every couple of years, and that projection looked honestly like it was three-dimensional. It was so spectacular.
Well, that's what we saw a lot of out of the movie Casper this summer. Four of the principal actors didn't exist.
That's
and,
right.
And there's some immense computer time in that movie.
Huh. The young man I was talking to, the animator from San Francisco, did the Casper work, so it was kind of interesting to hear his view. It was his first animation effort was Casper. Boy, out
wow.
of college. What an
yeah.
exciting project.
Yeah, a friend of mine was one of the voices, Joel Larish. Joel Lasky. Joel Lasky. You're John Larish. He's Joel Lasky. And he said it was kind of fun doing the voices, but it was really strange seeing that other character being him because it was so real.
What was, by the way, which voice did he do?
Stinky? Smelly?
Oh, Stinky, yeah.
Schmooky?
Right. Oh, yeah, he was Stinky. Okay.
Well, comparing the different, just a year apart in movies, Jurassic Park had about 6 minutes of CGI.
Yep.
Casper had 40 minutes.
And there's going to be much more coming down the pike because, the DreamWorks people, they actually had a stand at SeaGraph looking for animators taking applications. They had an off-premises show and cocktail hour. They were hiring animators going out of style. So.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very, very heavy move, and the productivity of animators has gone up tremendously because of the new software that they've got, and the quality of the animations, and even the human interfacings, where they can actually put sensors now, and there were several companies selling these completely body sensor and individual, and then be able to reproduce that in animation directly.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a wonderful show on the Discovery Channel called Movie Magic that goes into a lot of the background.
And the puppets, again, too, the Boss people were showing, for example, the use of sensors as puppets run by puppeteers, which was an interesting concept, too, as well.
Yeah,
I'm curious about something. What kind of a platform are they using as a CPU for all of this? Is this mostly still Mac and Power Mac generated?
Oh, no. Mostly the heaviest things out there, most of the stuff out there is SGI, Silicon Graphics, Indigos, and they're the big company in the field. Hewlett Packard is coming on very, very strong and taking a real big cut at this. Sun is still there too, but there is Mac and even Windows. I saw Windows, and in a couple of cases there were comments that Windows systems were doing a better job in some cases than Mac were for certain applications. And then virtual reality starts showing up much, much more, and that's still in the wings yet, and people still haven't figured out all, as well as the amusement and entertainment industry, because that seems to be where a lot of this is also going, from the standpoint of theme rides, closed capsule rides, there were spectacular things showing there, and a lot of education. They had to take kids again this year, in which kids were doing things that if you saw these little runts running around there doing stuff that we probably didn't do until we were in college.
Yeah, right.
Don't you just hate it?
The thing that worries me, of course, as an actor, is that you can now do an entire show with no people.
That's right. And the facial things that they've done, the ability to create faces, which just a few years ago was almost impossible. Today they're texturizing faces to where they've almost got a human face.
Well, they did that with Brandon Lee in The Crow. After he died, there were whole scenes where they put his face on another actor in order to finish the movie.
But what I'm talking about is where they're starting from scratch.
Yeah, right.
Amazing.
Yep.
Well,
it's pretty spectacular. Next year, the meeting's going to be in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I think you'll be more surprised, particularly with DreamWorks coming on so strong.
Yeah. So, yeah. John, did you get the video?
I've got the video. I had the video. Unfortunately, my friend took it in his luggage to Germany, so I have to wait to have it come back to me.
Well, I'd love to see it at some point.
Yeah, Nick, who's your friend that's got the THX theater in his basement?
Yeah, right. We'll take a copy over there and take a watch.
Absolutely. Hey, John Larish, thank you very much for bringing us up today.
Glad to catch up with everybody. Bye-bye.
Good to hear from you. Fascinating world. And now, let's return, if you will, to the world which most of us are living, which may be a little bit behind technologically. What you just heard on The Cutting Edge from John Larish, but nonetheless, hey, you can do a lot with it with the help of our expert panel. You're listening to Sound Bites on WXXI 1370 Rochester, WEOS FM 89.7 Geneva. I'm Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and Eric Cohen, and you, if you choose to join us at 716-263-WXXI or on the internet, talk1370@vivinet.com. We're going to get to some internet questions that have just come in a minute or two, but first let's go back to the phones and specifically to Spencer Fortin. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'm sorry, it's afternoon. In any case, I sort of forgot what I wanted to talk about listening to him talk about that stuff.
Who do we have here?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, this is Eric Earhart.
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to check with the screener to see if this was actually proper or legal, but I work for a local reseller, and I'm in desperate need of a Macintosh technician these days. And I wondered if I could just troll for about 5 seconds on the air.
You just did it.
Yeah. Would it be possible for me to get the name of the company and the phone number where they could reach me?
Feel free. There's nothing wrong with being a help wanted service around here.
Okay, great. You guys have a great forum, by the way.
Thank you.
Good show. The position is for an on-site Macintosh-oriented technician for Western New York Computing. We're a locally owned, independent reseller and systems integrator based out of Pittsburgh, New York.
You're in 441, correct?
Actually, we've moved from that location. We're now occupying the what used to be the Volplex building out in Pittsburgh in Bushnell Basin.
96.
Oh, that's the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, okay.
It looks like the Pentagon.
I know. We're going to put some additions on it and put lights all over it and so people can recognize it as...
If you hire me for enough money, I'll stand around in a Wookiee costume. I don't mind.
And he doesn't even need the face mask.
I will. I'll talk to the owner about that for an open house.
Perfect.
By the way, we mentioned the 15% personnel fee.
Yeah, right.
I thought you guys would be out of my range.
That's 15% to each of us, by the way.
See, that's definitely out of my range.
It's only 75%. You guys get to keep 25%.
That's right.
We're doing nothing but hiring you.
Right. You better give the number before you lose even more money here, Eric.
Exactly. Okay, folks can call me directly. Once again, my name is Eric Earhart, and I'm the Apple Products Sales Coordinator out at Western New York. My direct number is 381, Eric code 716, of course, 381-4120, extension 242. If they want to just fax me the resume, they can fax that over at 716-387-8889.
You might want to mention again what you're looking for.
Macintosh-oriented on-site technician. You'll need your own vehicle. knowledge of the Mac OS and Ethernet networking with the Mac would be major pluses. Also, interaction of applications within the Mac environment.
And bring your own Torx screwdriver.
Bring your own Torx screwdriver. Make sure you've got an 8.
Yeah, right.
You will be required, at least initially, to get into hardware service, taking things apart. And so if you've got any...
what about putting them back together?
Yeah, that's the hard part.
That's
together. A different
technology.
That's
even
more.
That would be a plus as well. If anybody's got some of the Mac authorization classes under their belt, that would certainly be a plus as well. The benefits are excellent, and the pay is really good, and it's a great company to work for. We've been on Rochester's Top 100, number one on Rochester's Top 100 fastest-growing companies for 3 years straight.
Okay, so. Eric, I have a feeling you'll be getting a lot of action from that, and thanks for checking in.
Thanks a lot. By the way, did any of you guys get out to Macworld?
Yes, I just came back a day or so ago.
What'd you think?
Absolutely amazing. The new Macintoshes with the PCI bus, the 604 microprocessor are just amazingly fast.
Can we say kick butt on the air?
You just did.
No, try it.
It was absolutely incredible. I walked in there, it was like a kid in Macy's toy store or something. I was just overwhelmed. It was the first year I went.
Yeah, some of the new peripherals that are out are amazing. We've known about the Zip Drive.
Right.
iOmega was showing the Jazz, which
right.
is the 1 gigabyte cartridge.
Right, but even better, if you went kitty corner over
yep.
to the SideQuest
yeah,
booth.
Yeah, the SideQuest booth
oh
is right behind iOmega.
PCMCIA Type 3 80 megabyte SideQuest removable. And
just fit
and,
right in your PCMCIA slot.
Right, unbelievable. And 1.3 gig, 3.5-inch SideQuest that are right. due out early next year.
Guys, you got to stop this. You're making my mouth water, and you're making my wallet cry.
One of the best ones was the Pinnacle Apex, a 4.3 gigabyte, 5.25.
4.6.
You're right, 4.6, 2.3 gigs per side. Removable optical drive
uh-huh.
at hard drive speed.
Absolutely. 37 cents a meg, I think it was. It was less than magnetic.
Yeah.
But it was 17 millisecond average access time, which was okay, not great,
right.
but boy, they're getting close, aren't
able
they?
To do 6 mm-hmm. meg sustained throughput.
Exactly.
And able to leave tall buildings in a single bop. Well, hey, Eric, thanks a lot for checking. Appreciate
it. Once again, thanks a lot, guys.
Our pleasure.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
And 716-263-WXXI or talk 1370 at vivinet.com. The way you get to us on Soundbites on WXXI and WEOS-FM. An off-air caller wanted to know about a problem he's having with Windows NT. Installed it on his office computer, no network card yet. The problem, if he boots into DOS, the mouse and keyboard work. If he boots into Windows NT, it will not accept input from the mouse and the keyboard. What is the problem?
Well, unfortunately, this is an off-air call, so we're missing information like what kind of computer is it. There are some computers that you can buy that have chipsets, particularly mouse and keyboard chipsets, that are not on the Windows NT hardware compatibility list.
Yeah.
So the first thing to do is to check that list. It's very possible that, yes, you have a system that NT is not compatible with.
In which case, you are just plain out of luck, right?
You are out of luck.
Well, unless he, if it's a newer board, he might be able to get an updated keyboard BIOS chip.
Yes, that's possible, but... That's got to go.
Not
now he's got to talk to the manufacturer.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, because it's off air, we can't ask him any of those questions. But my suggestion would be check the compatibility list. There's a whole entire separate booklet. Of course, you can't read the booklet until you've opened the package. But he's done that. So if he reads the list, he'll know what the problem might be.
If it happens to be a major brand, well-known, relatively standard machine, and it's not a problem of hardware compatibility, then what could be the problem?
It could be a serious problem. Well, for example, NT 3.5 installed fine on an HP Vectra at work, and on Friday we just installed a 3.51 on the same machine. Next contestant, please. So I'm not quite sure what the problem is, because, it's like 4:30 on Friday afternoon. We just looked at it and said, well, this is a Monday problem.
So that's what you're going to be doing first thing Monday morning, then.
Yeah. But so we don't know what the problem is, but there clearly
Need
is a
info.
Problem.
Need more info.
More input.
And 716-263-WXXI, we go next to Rochester. And, John, hi, you're on the air.
I have a pretty simple question.
The questions are always simple.
Okay. The answers are, right?
Right.
Is there a DOS command to reroute information that a program wants to send to a printer into a file?
There are many shareware packages that will let you do that. You can get them from
Any of the Ziff Davises, I'm sure the PC Cubed
PBS
would have it. The one that I use from the Computer Select Ziff Davis library is called LPTX, but they all let you reroute your different LPTs, LPT 1, 2, 3, define different file names, and then it'll take it from, instead of going to a printer, it'll put it into a disk file for you.
Okay, so it's something you just download from the internet then?
No problem.
Well, yeah, from the internet or from any of the BBSs in town. Then you run it as a TSR before you run your program.
Uh-huh.
And instead of, and when you set it up, you tell it COM3 is a file. Or LPT3, for example, is a file.
Well, you tell that, you tell the software that.
Well, you tell this utility program
that. Right.
Then when you run your software, instead of printing to LPT1, you print to LPT3. Then this utility program takes over and asks you for file name, and out it goes.
I have noticed sometimes, while you're up there, you might get two or three. I've noticed sometimes they don't work with certain software packages. We tried to use one, for example, with, I think it was DACEasy, or OneWrite Plus, and it just, because they're TSR, sometimes they conflict for the package you're trying to run.
Okay. Can I ask one other quick question?
Fire away.
It doesn't cause any real problem, but it's weird. In Windows, if I'm working at 12 o'clock midnight, it doesn't go to the next day. So that I haven't tried to see what happens if I just get out of Windows, but if I turn the computer off
and on, it's fine.
Right.
How old is your machine?
About 6 months.
Wow, I thought they'd solved that problem.
Yeah.
That used to be a problem with the BIOS chips many years ago. People who started to run BBSs discovered it was always the day they started their BBS, and it never changed the date until you turned the machine off. But that had been fixed, I thought, for years.
Sync problem.
While they're thinking, let me take you back to your other question. Were you talking about within Windows or within DOS?
This is within DOS. Within Windows,
Because within Windows, you can set up a generic printer and tell it to print it to a disk file instead of telling it to go through LPT1. So you can just choose within Windows, send it to whatever you call the printer.
That's a saying, though, that if he's running it...
I'm going back to the first question.
Well, he can run DOS programs within Windows, so you got to make sure that it is actually a true Windows program.
Well, what if he's running a Windows program from the DOS prompt from within Windows?
Never mind. John,
we totally got him lost.
John.
I can run it, from Windows, but it's not a Windows program.
Right, if it's a DOS program, then you need the TSR. Now, back to your second problem. Does it happen in DOS as well or just in Windows? In other words, if you exit Windows and go back to DOS and type date or time, is it correct?
I should try that.
I can't imagine it because it's going to take it from the same place. So it sounds like a BIOS problem, and now you need to talk to your manufacturer and explain to them that they've messed up and you need an updated BIOS. And they should not charge you for that, because that's obviously their error.
Yeah, it could just be the timing chip there that's on there, and you might have an inappropriate one that you're losing time on.
Oh, before you do that, look to see that, in fact, it's saying midnight and not noon.
Okay, I think it says midnight.
I mean, make sure that at 11 p.m. it says 11 p.m.
Not a.m.
Oh, yeah, no, it gets the a.m. and p.m.
Correct. All right.
Okay, that's good. Let's go back to the third question.
Let's answer a question you haven't been asked yet. Go back to your manufacturer and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we have a similar problem on the machine at my office that we run our BBS on. It works fine until Sunday. From Sunday to Monday, it doesn't update the date.
Even computers are allowed a day
right. That's a union issue.
Yeah.
Okay, right, exactly.
So every other night it works fine. Just from Sunday to Monday it skips a day. Or it doesn't update to Monday.
It's a religious port.
Yeah.
And probably belongs to the American Federation of Computers, AFL-CIO. Yeah. Anyway, we have a distress call that I want to pass along as soon as I remind everybody that you have WXXI 1370 Rochester, WEOS-FM Geneva. None other than Sound Bites. I'm Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and Eric Cohen. And the distress call that we have just came in a few minutes ago. A listener had a Mac SE30 stolen from his house off Lyle Avenue earlier this week. It's got 32 megs of RAM. It has a mark on the plastic casing. Casing is marred. And he also lost an ImageWriter 2 printer.
If you happen to see something like this, first of all, don't buy it. And second of all, you want to call Emmett at 254-2513. He needs it back.
And start checking, like, the swap sheet and trade press for one for sale.
Yeah, right.
He is, yeah.
Exactly. Don't buy it. It's hot.
This brings up a point about homeowners insurance and renters insurance. Very few policies cover computers, and if they do, it's for a very small amount. So if you have a computer system in your house or your apartment, check your insurance policy and make sure it's covered.
And if you're using it for a business out of your house, then it's definitely not covered under your homeowner's policy, and you need to have a separate business policy, either that or never mind.
And make sure you get a replacement value insurance and not current value, because current value is zero.
Yeah. Right, yeah. You can't replace the monitor.
Right.
The keyboard.
Exactly. Hey, we go back to the phones right now, and Mike, the gentleman with an off-air question about Windows NT, his mouse, and his keyboard, is on the air right now, and Mike, maybe we can help you out a little more.
Sure. Okay.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going? It's a digital computer.
Oh, well, there you go.
No.
Like a Vax or something like that?
I don't know. Let me see.
The Celebris?
I don't remember. I'm not.
You have a bunch of rainbows at college.
How old is it?
It looks pretty old. It's not my computer. It's somebody else's computer.
Okay.
And it was like, oh, yeah, if you get a chance to upgrade the DOS and throw Windows in. And like, yeah, sure, no problem. It only takes a second, right?
Yeah.
And he looked at me and smiled. Yeah, sure, it only takes a second.
Go for it.
Taking forever. NT must stand for nightmare, I'm convinced.
Not today, then.
Yeah, basically. Or is it just, or maybe is it a matter that I just don't have enough RAM on the thing?
How much memory you got there?
I think it might have 4. It ran.
No way. Mike. Minimum. If you were to read the documentation, you would find that the minimum amount of RAM for NT is 12 meg.
Right, exactly.
I recommend a minimum of 16 and closer to 24
okay.
just to boot it.
Oh, okay. Well, that would explain the problem.
There you go.
Okay, back to 3.1.
There you go. Well, try 3.1.1.
Yeah.
It's a tiny, tiny bit more efficient.
Okay.
Or hold off and go to 95.
But then you're still going to need at least 4 more meg.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 8 meg minimum.
Okay. It shouldn't be too hard for
there you
to
go.
Find another 4 meg somewhere in the office.
Good enough, Mike.
You're right.
Hey, my machine and somebody else's machine doesn't work.
We'll get that call next week.
We scavenged a 16 meg sim out of a Sun and stuck it in our Mac. And it worked, which was interesting.
The guy was on vacation. He's never known to next week.
Yeah, what does he care? We'll get a call next week from his fellow employee and say, did you tell him to take 4 meg out of my machine?
Man, my machine suddenly doesn't work. What did you change? Well, nothing. Yeah, but my buddy did.
Okay. Remember, we are not responsible for the outcome of any advice dispensed on this program. Now that I've got that disclaimer out of the way.
The names have been changed. Protect me.
And the guilty as well. 716-263-WXXI. Let's go to Hilton next. And hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Charles Keller.
Hi.
I wish you'd take your calls in order. I've been half an hour waiting for to be the third call. Anyhow, Dave. This is a very simple question, I'm sure, but I don't really know in that communication software you sold me how to find files that have been downloaded, and either...
Because that takes away from their future revenue base.
Yeah, so fix what little things they have to fix, and then move on.
That's right. And here, incidentally, is a suggestion from Howard in Rochester. He has a suggestion.
He has a suggestion for you, too, Howard.
Right. But anyway, he has a suggestion for Windows Backup. He wrote a batch file, BAT file, using 215 Ohio X copy, whatever that is. It says, first check your Windows directory, look for the date on most of the original files, then tell the batch file to copy all files made after that date, including all subdirectories. He copies that to a separate directory, zips it all to floppy. Time-consuming at first, but when, not if, you lose your Windows stuff, this material can keep all your customized setups. That's a pretty nice tip, come to think of it.
Yeah, it's not a bad tip at all.
Yeah. Now, question of backups, so that raises it. What, if any, backup utility? We talked about general utility
before. I'm pretty regular, man.
Works the best.
Actually, another related question to that is what to use for backups. Yeah, you know, we had a question a little bit ago on what's a good hard drive to buy. Well, you can get a real nice 1 gig hard drive for $500, or that 4 gig drive is only 15. You're not going to want to sit there and stick in 1,000 floppy disks to back up your hard drive.
Right, you might as well be installing Windows 95.
And they're getting so backup units are getting so cheap now. I mean,
what is it, 250s are under $150.
Well, even that is small. What I've been installing a lot of lately are the 4-millimeter DAT drives.
Yeah.
Where you can put 16 gigabytes on one tape.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the average home user.
Well, that will be in a couple of years.
How many home users actually, I mean, wouldn't it be nice to be able to stick in a DAT tape, put in a background backup program, and not worry about it for a very long time?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I agree. I agree with you.
But then we come to another issue, which is why are you doing backups in a business office?
That's right. Why are we doing backups? Who cares?
Perhaps you've got some client files, and you don't want to, if you need to retrieve them, have to go to a tape and wait and wait and wait for it to access it on tape. So then we're going to the whole idea of MO drives, rewritable, just optical,
SideQuest.
Or even the SideQuest drives, where for around $500 these days, you can get a SideQuest 250 meg, $69 to back the thing up, and you can have something with very close to hard drive speed, removable backup.
I've got a friend that's starting to offer service now where he will write a CD-ROM of your client file. So you can take your server, write it off all onto CD, and then, you know, a CD player is dirt cheap now. You've got it on optical disk, which is extremely durable, and you're not going to have to worry about where your data is going to be in a few years. And plus, you know, you write a couple of CDs off your 5-gig server, and you've suddenly reclaimed a couple of gigs of server space. Well, there's a grand for you that you're not going to have to spend again.
Right. Yep. But for an individual, any of the 250-meg tapes, the Connor makes one.
Colorado
makes a very good one, as a matter of fact. They also make a 350, same drive, just use a slightly longer tape. Those are good enough for the average home user. And even if you've got a half a gig drive and it takes two tapes to back it up, so what?
Yeah, but you got to start also questioning when you're going to do those backups. Do you really have to back up Doom?
Of course you do. That's the important.
Yeah, that's essential.
It's on CD.
High score table, yeah.
Right, but the way to really do it is you back up, you segregate things so that all of your data, your changeable data, the programs you write, stuff like that, are in a separate directory. Then you back up your programs only when you change. If you can do it by drive, that's even better. Put all your programs on one drive, all your data on another. Then only when you change your programs do you back up that one drive. But the other one you can back up fairly regularly and fairly inexpensively. But Eric is right. If all you ever do is write books, for example, and all you ever use is Windows and Word, say, you don't ever have to back up Windows and Word because you can always reinstall them. And your files, you had best be backing up in two or three different places every time you're done changing them. So it depends on what you're doing. For the average person, a small tape drive is more than sufficient to do what you want.
Fortunately, Microsoft seems to have conspired here because they keep putting all this important stuff in the Windows or the Windows System directory. So if you don't have, as you said in the previous caller, someone backing up all the NEs and all the new DLLs that have stuck into System,
right,
and you try and reinstall, you're going to be missing half the stuff that you need to make things run.
Right, but you only get new stuff every time you install a new program, you get new DLLs and things like that. The innies and the groups and stuff will change fairly regularly. What you could do, if you've got the right kind of backup software, it's just an incremental backup, it'll take that anyway.
And Soundbites continues on WXXI 1370 Rochester, WOEOS FM 89.7 in Geneva. I'm Bob Smith with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Eric Cohen, Nick Francesco, and you on this special pre-recorded edition where we answer listener email that has come to us recently at our internet address, soundbites@AOL.com. And here's something from Dan in Rochester, really a couple of questions. I want to take each of them in turn. Dan says, first of all, he's having a problem with his new Warp installation. Doesn't have a command prompts folder. It got deleted, and now he can't find a way to get one back. Do we have any suggestions?
Yeah, the command prompts folder is just a folder. You can create it. And then you would go out and run the, add the icons back, which would be in the OS2, in the OS2 directory. I believe it's just command.cmd. I believe that's the name of it. Could be command.com, but
That would be too easy.
That would be too easy. But it's just a folder like any folder. You can create a folder. You can delete folders. And you can create that one the same way. There's no magic to it. The files, I'm sure, are still on disk. It's just a matter of recreating that folder. And if it's not, then you can do a partial install of OS 2 and just pick the pieces you want and take the command folder.
There you go. And he has another question, which is an interesting, this is a hardware-related one. Where would he find a new driver for the SENG, that's P-S-E-N-G, TVGA 9400 CXI video chip? That's not the 8900, which I guess must be a common one.
The SENG is going to have, the first thing you do is call SENG directly. And the number will be in the manual that he's got. That would be the best thing to do because it's a very new chip.
He wants his 1024 by 768 by 256 back, or even 800 by 600 by 64K.
They might even have a bulletin board themselves. We have a SENG video card in our AST, and I actually found the SENG drivers on AST's bulletin board.
So check the BBS. SENG has one, AST has one. Whoever your manufacturer is might have one, but your first line of defense is to call SENG directly.
Now, here's something from Charles in Rochester that's kind of an interesting product suggestion. I don't know. As he says, I keep hearing scattered reports of secretaries operating trackballs with their feet in ways similar to those required by the old dictation transcribing machines. I've asked about this at several computer stores. No one seems to know anything about this. Can anybody out there comment on this? Just thinking about it suggests a large ball, single button, activated at least device would be about all one could handle in the normal trackball configuration. A device configured for this use could be more elaborate so as to allow use of both feet.
There actually is a device that I have seen that is a little platform like the treadle on an old treadle sewing machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little tippy platform. You put your both feet on it, and if you tip it to the right, the cursor moves to the right. If it's to the left, the cursor moves to the left. So that kind of thing, I have seen that. That is an actual product. And then you still have a place on the desktop that you pound for the click, for the buttons on the mouse. But I have seen that. That is around. I've seen it.
I want to know, though, is if you have to do that barefooted, then are you going to get athlete's foot playing around with your mouse ball?
Don't you have anywhere else you have to do?
Athlete's foot.
My favorite one actually was there was a device for the Apple II, which sat on, not the Apple II, for the Macintosh, that sat on top of the old regular Mac, sat on top of the monitor, and you wore a little reflector thing on your head, like doctors do.
It was an IR transceiver.
Right, it was an infrared transceiver, and as you turned your head, that moved the mind. And I don't know how you clicked. I suppose you banged your head on the monitor or screamed or something.
That initially came out as just an alternate pointing device, but they found their niche in disability access.
Yes, and in fact, it was very good for that.
Yeah, but you sneeze and you erase your work.
Exactly right. Somebody taps you on the shoulder.
Darn!
6 hours of work.
And you say, oh, no.
But, yeah, I have seen that treadle device. I don't know about a big trackball.
I've seen rudder pedals that are big in the flight simulator games that connect into your joystick port and are basically another joystick that you control with a rudder.
Now, what we really need, hold it. I got a better product here. What you get is essentially a small hula hoop with sensors on the inside, and then you bang your hip to the right, and the person moves that way, and you can get like a whole three-dimensional thing. You lift yourself up and down, and it's a hula hoop thing. Get your exercise and do your computer simultaneously.
Oh, yeah, right. What do we call this? Booty point two or something?
Booty
like
point.
But I think what Nick's talking about, though, I've also seen heard of other descriptions, like a big ball that would actually sit underneath there that you can rest your...
Philips CDI has one of those.
Off to the side and use one foot to sit there and more or less move the ball around, and you can use your left foot to do the left and right mouse button.
Well, maybe instead of using the ball, we can get the Alps has their track point out. It's the little touch guide that they have on a lot of the...
And
it uses conductive. It doesn't require pressure or anything.
Yeah, you just slide your finger around.
And, you know, it seems like that might be even better than the trackball. For doing
slide
something
your toe around.
Articulated
or make it the seat in your chair. You can just...
Ooh. Ooh, squirm point.
Are you going to be cutting this part from the tape?
No, we're definitely, we are unrehearsed.
Could you imagine the office, though, and watching your secretary slide forward, slide left, slide right, and then all of a sudden she slides off the chair?
Yeah, right.
And then how do you double click?
And let's talk about ergonomically successful. I mean, this is going to be really painful. Eventually, people are going to have, lower lumbar pain. I use my mouse too much. This is not a good thing. I think we're way off the beaten track.
Let's go to speed, the whole speech recognition thing. We're going to forget about the feet. We're just going to talk. And can you see the telemarketers all doing the speech recognition thing? I mean, you got the room of 50 people, and they're all yelling. They, you know, Flash Ranger Race, they yelled into someone else's PC. Right. You know.
Well, that's going to be a whole different thing. I mean, the term cursor is going to take on a whole new meaning, I think, once we have voice recognition. But I want to thank folks.
Where's my rim shot sound effect here? It seems to be missing when I need it. Where is it when I need it the most? But you know, something else, actually, you know, on a somewhat more serious vein, though, really, there haven't been major advances in the interface between human being and machine in quite some time. There have been some nice refinements. I mean, you can say the track point on the ThinkPads is a nice refinement. Some of the keyboards that are ergonomic, some of the mouse designs that we've had recently are nice in that respect. But we've been a while since the advent of the mouse itself, since we've had any kind of a revolutionary development. Are we due for one, or is there a clear sign of where it'll go?
There's been so many possibilities in the past. I mean, the touch screens. Everybody thought, oh, touch screens are going to be perfect. But nobody really wants to sit there for 3 or 4 hours with their arm in the air trying to point to stuff. It hurts.
It's great for a restaurant industry where they're just going up and, quick typing up an order. But, you know, like Nick's saying, to sit there for 8 hours, sitting there with your hand up on the screen, I don't think so.
I think speech is really going to be making a move here. I think there's a number of excellent systems. The price has come way down. IBM has made some major inroads. If you get Perfect Office, you'll find on the CD that comes with Perfect Office, it's now coming with speech recognition software as part of the suite package. So I think we're the AV Max, I wish that hadn't gone away. Just the ability to say, okay, start Word, open spreadsheet. Now we're really coming to more than command. We're coming to some decent speech recognition. I've seen in the business environment where people are actually doing their dictation, they're doing billing, they're doing everything by just talking to their computers, and they're finding that they can do an awful lot where they were afraid of computers before. Now that they can talk, which is something that especially this group does very naturally, thank you, I think speech is going to make some major inroads the next year.
Can you imagine the poor PC trying to keep track of it and trying to create a transcript of this show?
Well, that's the real problem with, you know, I mean, if you're talking about the Cattle Car Galactica thing where Commander Adama would sit and do the story moral at the end of every episode, the words would just appear on the screen. At no time did he ever say, or go back and change his mind, you know, because it was a TV show. Nor did he ever say, you know, or any of the tiny little things that people put into their speech. So if you're going to create a computer that will actually take your dictation and put it on the screen, first thing you're going to have to do is teach it. You don't put in, you know, unless it's relevant to the sentence. And you don't put in You don't put in all these swear words. You don't. And what do you do if you guys say, no, what I really meant to say was, from where?
They did that in Star Trek, though, when they had the self-talking typewriter with Gary Collins and Terry Garr. What's it doing? It's typing everything I say. And the typewriter just went ahead and typed everything she said, including that.
The other key thing that you're going to have, though, is a quick mute switch. It's going to have to be a big button right up there. As you're going along doing your taxes, you realize, I just owe this much to the government. You know, it's blurting out, and the kids are in the back room there. You want a quick mute
for
that.
The whole office situation is going to change once we do get viable speech recognition, because the current cubicle setup isn't going to work for you.
No, what you're going to need, actually, is a complete audio console in front of you, just like the one that I'm working at to record
this
show.
There is a product out called the Jabra Earphone that works with the Macintosh.
Jabra the Earphone.
And all the Power Macs are shipping with the speech recognition in it. It's basically a little tiny earphone you put in your ear, and you speak through the bone subduction that vibrates the bones in your ear, and this microphone picks up just what you say and cannot pick up anything in the ambient noise around you.
That'll be really necessary. I have a confession to make. When the PC Junior first came out, I was yes, yes, yes. And I went to a big seminar that IBM put on, and there were table after table after table of people sitting at these things, and I was in the back row. And as you remember, they had infrared keyboard connectors.
My first computer.
One of the things the guy showed us was how to get the sound games to, you know, sound files and play. And then he went on to talk and got into this really terribly boring lecture. Well, I discovered that all of these little IR things are on the same frequency, and that you can go quite a distance with them. So in the middle of this guy's lecture, I would start somebody else's sound thing going. And he'd look at them and give them this stern look, and then they'd work really hard to shut it off. And I'd go do one way over the other side of the room, a couple of tables up. And I had the whole place eventually going, and nobody ever knew it was me, and I'm confessing that now.
I love it. Nick's my kind of person I'd be wanting to sit in a class with, because I usually always get into trouble myself. You know, all right, who got into the mainframe and start, right, logical there, I got in trouble.
Well,
Francesco's phone number.
Yeah, right. But can you imagine, you know, you print out your report, you give it to the boss, and it says, and next year's numbers are, Mr. Smith is a complete jerk. $4,300,000. What is that?
That's a
because
lot.
Somebody, well,
yeah,
somebody else, you know, the boss, because somebody behind you as they walked by your cubicle said that, and it got in your report and you didn't see it. This is dangerous stuff.
So that's why you have it speak back to you. All the Macs come with speech playback so that you can have it read your reports back to you.
Right,
which has got to be comical in and of itself at the times.
Soundbites on WXXI 1370 Rochester, WEOS FM 89.7 in Geneva. I'm Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, Eric Cohen, Steve Ray, Dave Enright, and you. And we are answering listener mail, actually email, that has come to us recently at soundbites@AOL.com. An interesting sort of technical question here about Lotus. And Eric, I'm going to throw this one at you, being the resident number cruncher in our group. Using Lotus Works spreadsheet to keep track of a financial transaction and to generate a report. I'm going to assume that this is something like a 123 light here. Enters the ASCII codes in the printer screen string setup, but nothing happens. Code gets printed out in the report, the printer ignores the string. You check the file, it says epson-lq.prt file, codes are listed. Can you help me? Is there a way to bold individual cells with LotusWorks? That's Irvin Brighton wants to know that.
He's trying to put printer codes in individual cells?
I guess.
Well, Lotus won't take the escape code.
I would move to Microsoft Excel version 5, which lets you individually format.
Yeah, see, if you put a printer escape code into a cell, the reason they're called escape codes is because they start with the escape character. You cannot put the escape character into a cell in Lotus Works. So you get everything else, the right bracket, the P, the J, the 2, the semicolon, but you don't get that escape character. So consequently, the printer never knows that you are sending it a command. It thinks it's just a string of random characters.
Bottom line, get a new spreadsheet that lets you do that. I don't know if the latest 1.2.3 for Windows will let you do that, but I do know Excel does, and I think Quattro Pro lets you move around.
Yeah,
Quattro Pro would let you move around and play with the typefaces in individual cells, even in the DOS version.
Right, and since you're an owner of Works, they'll probably let you buy Excel for, what, $1.23 anyway?
Something like that. Right, exactly.
Market share, that's the important thing. Here's another question. Maybe one of the last one or two that we'll have time for in this segment. Has a 486DX33, 8 megs of RAM, and an AMI BIOS. When the computer boots up, the BIOS recognizes 8,064 out of the 8192K. What causes this to happen? How can he get the BIOS to recognize that last 128K?
Back to blaming IBM.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, don't worry about it. The system is working fine, but it's all due to the system and the way it's going to set up its buffering and the way it counts up memory.
In the original IBM PC, the last 128K of memory out of 1 meg was reserved for special systems resources. So when your system counted up on the original IBM PC, it did not count that last 128K because you could not use it. Everybody since then has maintained that dumb way of counting. It doesn't have to be that way. Everybody does it. You have it, you can't use it, so the system doesn't report it to you, so you think you don't have it, and you get porky about it. But it is there. You just can't use it, so the system isn't reporting.
And your 4 meg machine says 3,904K and the whole nine.
Well, we went the same round when the first ATs came out that they had the 1 meg. And folks were saying, well, I got 1024, and how come I can only get it 640? It's again one of these limitations. It was there, but you couldn't use it.
And with that, unfortunately, that just about wraps up this particular edition of Soundbites, a special edition devoted to listener email. Your questions called in to us at Soundbites. Smith, thanking you and inviting you to join us once again next week at this same time for another edition of Soundbites.
Carter says, oh, you have a sound card in here. It's not active.
Hello.
Hey, good on you. Love
that. Oh, well.
5-4-6-300 flight now.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we are no longer active because time is up for this particular edition of Soundbites, except to say thank you, as always, to Nick Francesco, to Steve Ray, to Dave Van Rijs, and to all of you who have stopped by with your questions, as well as those of you who have stopped by with your pleasures. Absolutely. We thank you for that. And thank you all for being a part of Soundbites today from the Dome Arena at the Rochester Hamfest here on WXXI 1370 Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva. For Esther Bale, our technical director, I'm Bob Smith. Thank you for joining us and inviting you to be with us again next week for another edition of Soundbite.
Okay, here.